So we're going to have Dr. Clinton to come from My Covenant Place, where they provide services to the perpetrators of abuse intervention programs. And they have a couple of sites throughout the state of Maryland. I'm quite sure he'll mention that. So he gets to work with the batterers or abusers or perpetrators, whatever term you would like to use. But let's give him a round of applause as he comes. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Dr. Bela Clinton, and as you heard previously, I work with primarily the perpetrators, and I do group facilitation, and I cannot speak to the many experiences I come across week to week, just working with men who are sent to us through the court system, and very few are volunteers who come in and ask to enroll in the program because their relationships are on the verge of breaking up. But when I got the invitation to speak on emotional intelligence and healthy relationship, I mentioned that to a colleague who is my supervisor, and she said, there's no such thing. And we joked about it because, like, why do you think an astronaut will drive miles in the Kuiper to attack another astronaut who is in a love triangle with the person she's in love with? It's because the emotional intelligence was lacking at that point. Because the matter of the heart takes precedence over intelligence. Which goes to say that many years ago, the two were separated. Intelligence was one thing, emotion was another thing. So there was no combination. So emotional intelligence kind of became, maybe 40 years ago, started to play around, and then eventually, somewhere in the 80s, became the term out of psychological research just to speak to how people can feel the way they feel, recognize the way other people feel, but still be able to process well enough and make sound decisions so as to produce positive outcomes. So I'm from My Covenant Place, and I serve in dual capacity, the director of the Violence Intervention Program, and I'm sorry, group facility. I do have a question just to break the ice. And my question is, how do you put a giraffe in a refrigerator? And I need you to think before you attempt to answer. How do you put a giraffe into a refrigerator?
Build the refrigerator around the giraffe.
Build a refrigerator around the giraffe. Anybody else?
Get a toy giraffe and put it in the refrigerator.
Say that. Get a toy giraffe and put it in the refrigerator. All right.
But you can't.
You can't. All right, so that was just to give an idea of how people think. Just an idea of how people think. So emotional intelligence will have to do with the level of intelligence and the process you're applying to how you feel, because how you feel affects how you act, how you think affects how you feel. And so the simplest answer is you open the door and put the giraffe in. Now, whether it fits there or not was not my concern. How do you put the giraffe in it? The people who think that all you have to do is open up the refrigerator and put the giraffe in, the people who don't sweat it. They just let it flow. And then the people who are building the refrigerator are like, I gotta process this. This is not right. I feel this way about it, and I need to get to the bottom of this. So there's nothing wrong with either way. I'm just saying that it gives me an idea of how people think. Now, I have another exercise that I want us to engage in. I want all of you to possibly dig into your pocketbooks, wallets, pockets. Find something that is valuable to you. And tell us a two-sentence story about whatever it is. And if you don't have anything on you that is that valuable, think of something that is not with you here, but is part of your value system, is valuable to you. And just tell us a word or two about how connected you are to that thing and why. And while you're doing that, I'll try to play a song and see if I can get it to work. And then I need you to also follow the lyrics. And it's a familiar song, and I'm guessing most of us already know. Self-esteem, that can go for your value system, that can go for your belief system, that can go for anything that you hold dear to you, because we all come from different backgrounds and we all learn to be who we are from different backgrounds. So who we are meaningful to us, and when we have to share who we are with another person in an intimate relationship, it requires a lot, and that includes emotions and intelligence. So emotional intelligence was birthed from the fact that those things are important to us, they affect us. We have to be able to express them, we have to be able to interact with other people, even while we feel the way we feel, but we want to do it with some level of intelligence to make sure that we are processing right, feeling the way we're feeling, acknowledging the way we're feeling, and then making some sense as we go along. So let's just start with definitions. So, emotion is likely to show or express emotions. Intelligence is the ability to learn or understand things or deal with new or difficult situations. Healthy means having good health or something that is good for your health. So if you go to your doctor to tell you what's not good for your health, so don't eat this, don't eat that, don't do this, go to the gym, exercise, do do a lot. And then relationship is the way in which two or more people or things are connected.
Next one.
Now, what is emotional intelligence? The capacity to recognize first, recognize, manage, and communicate our emotions, as well as appropriately respond to the emotions of other people. What does that mean for us? You heard the song. Anybody picked up anything from the song? Is there anything about this song that is appropriately relevant to what we're talking about now when it comes to the lyrics?
Know when to walk away.
Know when to walk away. That's one sign of emotional intelligence. Anything else?
Know when to run.
Know when to run. Anything else? Now, there were two strangers. There were two strangers. They were traveling on the same train. How could one person tell or sense the emotion of the other person? One person had made a life out of reading people's faces. So sometimes people's expressions will tell you things. Sometimes people will verbally express the way they feel, but your ability to be receptive and responsive means a lot, the timing. I'll tell you a story. I came to the United States and I had not seen a cousin of mine for decades. And so it was Thanksgiving. And I decided I would call and say hello, and I thought she would be excited to know that I was here. And the first question she asked me is, how did you come here? And I said, as a visitor. And she says, well, you want to go back home? Because if you stay, you get thrown in jail. This will happen, that will happen. She gave me all the negatives that will happen in jail. And I was very discouraged. But I was challenged. So I processed that emotion with a lot of intelligence. And then years later, we met in a store, because I never called back. And we started our conversation, and she was expressing to me, another relative had expressed to her that she hurt their feelings. And I said, and she said, I was only doing it with good intent. And I said, maybe the timing. I said, I had just gotten to the United States of America when you said that to me. I didn't know what the process was. I didn't know what to do. And the best advice you could give me was to go back home to a war-torn country. Like, at that point, I'm not thinking you're in my best interest. So the timing sometimes we have to be mindful of. So, let me go back to that one thing. So, emotional intelligence is defined by five core traits by speakers. So self-awareness, self-regulation, motivation, empathy, and social skills. Now, if you look at those, you see that it starts with you. And it goes beyond you to include other people in terms of sensitivity and consideration. So, self-awareness is knowing yourself. To know yourself, you have to know your needs, you have to know your wants, you have to know your likes, you have to know your dislikes. But most importantly, in any human interaction, you have to know your triggers. We all have triggers, we all have cues. So if driving down the street at 12:30 is a trigger for you, regardless of anything, you know that that is a trigger for you. So you try to evolve a particular route at that time of the day. Now, In addition to knowing your triggers, you also want to be able to identify the reason behind your triggers, whether we agree or not, because sometimes we don't like to take the responsibilities for how we feel. But whether we agree or not, sometimes the way we feel stems way back before us. So it comes from childhood, it comes from previous relationships, it comes from previous interactions. And a lot of the time you hear people say, I have trust issues. Now, where does that come from? From other experiences you may have had in your life. So it could be insecurity, it could be fear, it could be shame, it could be guilt. And then you have to be conscious of your emotions in the moment. Because things happen. If I walk through this door and people had an outburst of laughter, I'm thinking, you're laughing at me. At that point, I'm really embarrassed. But I missed that opportunity to recognize and properly identify that I'm embarrassed. So I tell you, I'm angry. I came in and people laugh, so I'm angry. But anger is a secondary emotion.
It's never primary. The first thing you feel, if you develop the ability and apply it properly to understand what you feel in the moment, sometimes it saves you from escalating to the secondary emotion, which is anger at that point. When you're angry, it's difficult to think through. It's difficult to kind of calculate your actions. The first thing you know is what you turn to, and sometimes even worse. Self-regulation. How well are you able to manage your emotions under pressure? And I know I see the judge, I saw the detective, but is there anybody who's worked in a correctional facility? Now, if you work in a facility like that, you have to be able to manage your emotions under pressure, because you're getting it from all ends. People who are immediate the very day angry. People who stay too long and think that they need to be released, very angry. Co-workers very angry because you got people coming in from different perspectives in terms of profession and giving their own take on what needs to happen for a particular individual, we call them where I work. Are you triggered by everything regardless of the intensity? My mother said, when I grew up, my mother would say, you are too thin skinned. Yeah, people can't laugh, you mad. People can't look at you, you mad. So you're gonna have problems in life. So that's where all of the personality starts to shift. Are you able to weigh your options and choose your batters appropriately? Because some things are not worth it. You'll be able to, the intelligent part of it is gonna be able to tell you. At this point, I know this person, or I know my spouse or partner very well to know that this person is attention seeking right now. So I'm not gonna buy into this because I got plans to be at a particular place at a particular time. And if we start this engagement, it's not gonna end right now. Do you understand when to fight and when to walk away? And that was what you pick up from the song. Okay, so the next one. Then motivation is transforming negative thoughts or situations into positive ones. And I'm sure we all have had experiences across the board, both negative and positive. And I just shared one of mine with you. I went through 50 million. I got 50 million to share with you, but that was just one. And the thing to it is that particular advice motivated me to do more. So when I said to my cousin, I'm very grateful that you said that to me, after I expressed to her how disappointed I was, that I'm very grateful that you said that to me today, I'm not just the little cousin you left in Liberia many years ago. I am Dr. Clinton. And she's like, ah. Oh. And I said, I've also brought my parents over. They're also legally residing in the United States. So what you said to me may have been disappointing at that time, but I used that feeling to motivate myself to do better so that I can share that experience with other people so that they can be motivated to do better for themselves. Now, negative self-talk versus positive self-talk. My negative self-talk at that point was, it's difficult to get paper in the United States of America, I'm never gonna be able to get it. But the positive self-talk was, other people have come before me and they were able to get it, they're still here. Even my very cousin who was encouraging me to go back came when I was a kid, and I know she was not born yet, so she had to go through a process. So I can go through that process too. So that was the positive self-talk in that part. And we can do that in our relationships. And there are times where people tell themselves in the relationships, you know, sometimes I see people say, I stay because of the children, I stay because I love him, I stay because of that, I stay because of that. And that's the positive self-talk you're giving yourself. But then my response is always, what did you teach that child? To stay even in the midst of negativity. Because if the child is in that environment, the child is also learning from you how you respond to these things. And I'm not asking you to give up the best, but I'm asking you to weigh your options and make sense of it, even while you go through the emotions. What keeps you motivated? For some people, it's reading. For some people, it's social outlet. But you have to be able to go, do you have a support system? Is there anybody that you share intimacy with? And I do this with perpetrators all the time, and the amazing thing is, you say to them, do you have intimate relationships with other men? No. And we laugh about it because I said society has taught us to define intimacy by sex. And that's not true. Intimacy is just when you're able to expose your vulnerabilities as well as your strengths to anybody. So you can have an intimate relationship with your father or with your brother. Who is that one person that you run to and tell the truth? Who is that one person who knows that you're spending time at your girlfriend's house when your wife thinks that you are at work? That's the person. But to establish that kind of relationship, my recommendation for you is to establish that with your partner. But before you can do that, you have to have what we call self-intimacy. You have to be able to reconcile your own emotions with yourself. You have to be able to understand, this is how I feel, this is why I feel that way, and this is what I'm able to do with about what I feel. Now, empathy is the ability to recognize others' emotions and appropriately respond to them. When I talk to my 8-year-old about empathy, so we don't go to this level, I basically say, put yourself in my shoes. And so, yesterday morning, he says, why are we using mommy's car to take the daddy's car, bro? I say, so you gotta put yourself in my shoes because you will have to borrow from somebody else. He said, don't worry, I'll buy you a Lamborghini. And I said, no. Just knowing that you can afford it makes me happy, but don't buy it. He said, you don't want it? I said, no, you don't. Once I know you can afford it, I'm happy. But for me, the empathy was more important just to understand that, okay, my dad is in need of a car, how is he getting to work? And most times, people act out their feelings in different ways. And if we're partners to these people and we understand the background history to their acting out and can show some empathy, then we're able to move forward. That's what the emotional intelligence is all about. And I say to people that, something we call the empathetic assertion. So when you basically write a behavioral plan, you have people who say, I will not do this. And you say, I understand why you don't want to do it, but let's do it this way, let's do it that way. All right, so let's move to the next one. Social skills, the ability to interact well with others, how good is your communication skills? Now, we all have different communication skills, but the question is, how effective is yours? Assertive, aggressive, passive, and passive-aggressive. Now, getting into what those mean, assertive is when you stand up for yourself without disrespecting yourself or anybody else. Aggressive is, of course, needless to say, when you get violent. Passive is basically you're the doormat. And then passive aggressive is people who use hidden forms of aggression to communicate their emotions or their needs. Now, this is for you to just look over. Is your relationship healthy? Now, those are the qualities of healthy relationship, and these are the qualities of unhealthy relationship. And this is what a healthy relationship will look like. Respect is in the middle. And support is part of it. Honesty, safety. People have to feel safe enough to trust you. And people have to be trustworthy to provide that safe environment for us. And then you can reach your own emotions here again, whether it's low or it's high. These are basically some of the things that emotionally mature people will do. They move on. They stay in control, but they stay in control of themselves and nobody else. They embrace change. They know how to keep happy. They act with kindness. They take risks, but with caution. They live for the now. They accept responsibility for their actions and behaviors. They celebrate other people's successes. They accept failure. They enjoy their own company. They know it. When and how hard to work hard, they are resilient. And they can reevaluate their own core beliefs. So when you get into a relationship, especially when you cross-cultural dating, there are times when you have to reevaluate and assess yourself and then negotiate well enough to be able to reach your compromise. And this is just a quotation. Emotion is a place, but it must not interfere with taking the appropriate action. By Suzanne Buckley Baker. And I think that will be it. These are just resources that you can access and read more. And the next one, the next page, I guess, is my references. And that's my contact if you need to contact me.
So any questions? One or two questions we can let Dr. Clinton answer. We got a question in the back.
How do you deal with narcissists?
I called him out. No. But here's the thing. We do understand that those people don't benefit from treatment because they don't believe anything is wrong. I've had at least two come to group, at least two. The sad news is one of them was relatively young, 29, all-American, educated, master's degree, still lives with mom and dad. But just to understand how in the world people in America are homeless when there are lots of jobs and people can go to school, but that's all you need. So my approach to people who come to group and demonstrate that kind of personality, I first will engage you in an individual setting away from the group and lay out to you just by motivational interview, and I ask questions that will help you look into yourself. And then I start to point out. So from that point, my lecture in groups will take the trend that you will understand is for you, but other people benefit from it. So then I start to talk about personality clash. I start to talk about some of the things that happens in your relationship that you're responsible for. And then my experience has been that they come around. So my approach to those people has always been first to engage them individually. Because first, nothing is wrong. And so if I call you out in the presence of other people, then I'm confirming that nothing is really wrong, because that's when your arrogance will really kick into, you know, full effect.
All right, thank you so very much.